that was coming in, that some that Peter and I would handle, and that was sort of in our offices here. The licensing stuff was, in another office, again, just down the down, a couple offices down, and the artists actually producing, visual and elements supported that. So it was all done in-house, which was fun because we had our own workshop, and it was easy to oversee, I guess, the whole empire, if you will, and control it and keep the continuity where we liked in each of the respective turtle universes, the younger one, the older one, the licensing one. It was quite an experience and quite enjoyable at times, and a lot of people, I think, felt that, people, Pete and I signed a contract, took a check, and just sat back and watched the whole thing unfold. It couldn't be more the opposite. We worked probably 90 hours a week at times on every aspect. You'd spend all day in the office, and if you were submitting notes to one of the cartoon shows or things like that, you went home, and after dinner, you worked on the creative stuff to then had to be delivered the next day and that kind of stuff. So the it was hard, it was intense, but we were glad to have it because these were our characters. We owned them, we controlled them, we created them, and it was quite an honor to have that ability and have to have that say over your creations, because heroes like Jack Kirby and other people that inspired us initially, the giants we stand on the shoulders of, didn't have the say in their creations, and most oftentimes didn't participate in the success of them. So we knew we were quite fortunate and happy to work hard for it.
Well, how did some of the efforts and other creative differences, such as the inception of Venus de Milo, hinder you and Laird's partnership over the turtles? And do you feel that some of your innovations, which were initially less successful, then have presented new opportunities for the franchise in later years?
When I look at the evolution of, say, Venus de Milo as a character, for example, because that's has had controversy in the past, the very short origin of Venus de Milo is, we were writing a fourth turtle movie for New Line, and part of the New Line Cinema, who produced the first three. And the idea that everybody agreed to, including Peter, was adding a fifth turtle. And so we initially had a fifth turtle that was a male turtle. We named it after Kirby, as our hero, Jack Kirby. And as the story goes, it was a turtle was exposed at the same time the other turtles were exposed. He floated further downstream and was raised and grew up differently. And then it was part of the element, the foundation, the construction of that movie plot. When that movie didn't go ahead, we then entered into agreement with Saban and Fox Kids to develop a Turtles live action show. Kirby, the fifth turtle, was a key element they really picked up on. They said, well, that would be a great addition to the live action TV show, is to add a fifth turtle. Kids would love it, and a new audience, and things. So it was a male turtle that was going to be added through most of the development of that, until we got close to the very end, when it was suggested that it be changed to a female turtle. I, being a fan of, say, Lieutenant Ripley and so many strong female characters, I said, well, that makes sense. I could see it would be great to have, besides, April, you have another strong female character in that. Peter didn't agree, and didn't like that idea. Not that he's, has anything against women or anything. He just didn't like the concept. He didn't like the way it was presented, and didn't like the way it pitched. And he had a lot of good points. I ultimately said, let me run with it. And I said, I'll make it the best that I can, and let's see if it works. And so he stepped back. I produced the show, and it was the least successful of some of the exploitation of the turtles as characters. But that's part of the process. When you look at, say, the first three movies, I think I like the first movie and the third movie the best. The first movie the best. The third movie was one of my favorites. The second movie I didn't like as much, and there was different reasons. Like, I thought it should have been Bebop and Rocksteady, not Toke and Rezar. And then there's a lot of different stuff that happened in the second movie that I think could have been done better. So that was my, creatively, that was my least favorite. But when you talk to fans, the second movie tends to be their favorite, the first one and the second one. So it's, when you look at different iterations of the Turtles, it's a perspective sort of thing. Some were more successful, some were least successful. And it's just, you never know, and you never know what the response is going to be. When I went into working on the IDW comic series 11 years ago, we took some risks, and we thought there might be some issues with some of the things that Tom and I were changing with the story. Fortunately, it was embraced, and it's been the longest running Turtles comic book series, which has been fantastic. When Ciro Neely did the 2012 Nickelodeon animated series and wanted to do a CGI, fans were up in arms. They hated the idea that we're doing him in CG, not the traditional animation. That ends up being one of the fans, even the original fans, some of the most favorite Turtle animated cartoons since then. It was just sort of, you got to give it a chance. The Michael Bay produced movies, I think, weren't as successful as they could have been. I think they could have done things differently, but I didn't own or control them at that time, so they were what they were. So you never know what you're going to take. People are already asking me, what do I think about what Seth Rogen's going to do? Let's find out what Seth Rogen's going to do. I'm excited for him. He's bringing a vision to it that he thinks is exciting and creative, and we're going to all experience what he sees in our characters when it comes out, and I'm excited to see it. But, you know, the same for Last Ronin. I just finished issue 5 of Last Ronin, which was a huge risk. It was a very edgy, older version of the Turtles, which I was excited to do, but it could have failed as easily as it became a success that it is. So you never know. It's kind of like going to Vegas, I guess. But sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Now, you mentioned words and pictures earlier. An incredible effort to represent the art of some of the aforementioned, such as Jack Kirby, Frank Miller, Richard Corbin. I know Simon Bisley stuff was in there, to name just a few. As a serious and lifelong collaborator of this artwork, what was your ambition for words and pictures at the time?
My ambition for words and pictures was to firmly state or restate what I felt that strongly my whole life was that comic book art as an art form is a true art form, not only an American art form, but it's an art form that's existed for years. You know, I feel the first people that painted in caves were telling stories with pictures. Those were their words, hieroglyphics, Aztec, those massive, beautiful Mayan reliefs, those were words and pictures combined to tell a story. So to me, I wanted the comic books as an art form to be respected more as an art form. So I wanted to show it in a museum setting, oftentimes showing the completed work. When you buy a comic book, you have the cover, and then you've got, say, 20 pages of interior art. Whenever I could show the entire comic book so people could see the cover and then read it, walking along the walls of the museum was to show it in that form as it originally was. So that, and I feel like it had been looked down upon as people with lesser skill do comic books. You can't make a living from comic books. Art teaches, I had some great art teachers, but I've been laughed at when I would tell people in the early days what I want to do for a living, including my parents thought I'd never move out of the basement because I wanted to be a cartoonist. Well, you can't make a living being a cartoonist. Nobody makes money at that. That's what fools and idiots think it's something you can survive at and support a family. So I just wanted to bring it to a respect level that I felt it had and has gotten since then. And that was my mission with Words and Pictures.
Kevin, before we go, what can you tell us about the upcoming release for The Last Ronin this summer, and what lies ahead for your work at Kevin Eastman Studios?
The exciting part of The Last Ronin was I wanted it to be a complete story, 200 pages, have a beginning, middle, and end. It was based firmly on an idea that Peter and I had in 1987, and this is sort of an adaptation, a furtherance of that. You know, we took a 20-page outline and built it into a 200-page story, so I wanted it to be another level, another addition to the Turtles multiverse, if you will. And that was a dream. And I feel like, it's been 35 years in the making from its original creation. The last 3 years, myself, Tom Waltz, the incredible Escoza brothers, Ben Bishop, Antonio Delgado, all the creative, the whole art team that brought this together have worked their butts off for, 24, 25 months solidly. And I'm really proud of it. And I'm excited that it's wrapping up, and the fan response has been better than I could have hoped for. It's doing what you love and sticking to your guns and, hoping for the best. And this time it worked out, like I mentioned earlier, just as easily it could have failed. But we're thrilled and excited to see the full collection coming out this summer. And then, speaking of, Kevin Eastman Studios in general, What's exciting is Courtney and I are going back on the road starting this month. We haven't done conventions since 2020, so we're going back out. I think we've got 6 shows this year, and people want to find out
where all are they at? Where are your shows at? Where are your shows taking place?
You go to www.kevinethanstudios.com and you can find out. No, you go.
All right. We'll keep it there.
No,
we're gonna throw that in. No worries.
No, I was being silly. It was my car salesman.
Oh, you're pitching to us.
No, but Lexington, Kentucky is this month. We're doing one in Huntsville, Alabama. We've got one in Montreal this year. We're doing a really fun one towards the end of the year up at Granite State up in New Hampshire, which is kind of evolved into a turtle con, if you will, where they're having different turtle voice actors, as well as a whole wide array of different turtle artists from different aspects of the turtle universes there. And that's also home turf. You know, my wife's family's from New Hampshire. My family, including myself, obviously, is from Maine. San Diego Comic-Con, of course, that's home turf for us as well these days. We're excited to be back on the road doing that. And then Kevin Eastman Studios is a company. We've got other projects we're doing, Drawing Blood, Radically Rearranged Ronin Rag Dolls, a number of other things. But visit the website and you find out all kinds of information you might find useful or not useful.
All right, sounds good. And there you have it, Wall Crawlers. Kevin, thank you for taking the time to speak with Reagan and I tonight. It's been a pleasure.
No, it was a pleasure talking to you, and it was fun.
For more information on Kevin Eastman or for exclusive access to his upcoming projects, please visit fan.kevineastmanstudios.com.
And we'll be back here to wrap things up shortly. I'm Ms. Reagan here with Poxy Leonard, and you're listening to The Ghost of Hollywood.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, streaming live at kboo.fm. KBOO Community Radio relies on support from listeners like you so that we are able to continue providing the community with a voice powered by the airwaves. To donate, please visit our website at kboo.fm. A red donate button is located at the top of the page. Simply click here and list the amount that you would like to donate to KBOO. While you're at it, leave us a message telling us why you support KBOO. As always, thank you for your continued support of KBOO Community Radio.
Want to be in the know for all things Ghost of Hollywood? Check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com for all the newest episodes and updates.
And don't forget to listen every other Friday live on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. If you're not local, you can also find us live on KBOO.fm. And while you're there, please consider donating to Portland's very own listener-powered radio.
And we're back here on The Ghost of Hollywood in lovely Portland, Oregon. I'm Poxy Leonard with Miss Reagan, and we've just wrapped a cool little interview with our friend Kevin Eastman, who is still hard at work on his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all these years later.
I'm proud of you, Poxy.
Why?
You didn't ask him about the Batmobile or his Red Dawn Army tank.
Well, I think he sold the Red Dawn Army tank, but like I said, if I can't ask to drive it, I have nothing to ask.
Anyway, we'd like to thank Kevin Eastman for taking the time to join us on the show today, along with his assistant, Jasmine Arriaga, for her hard work coordinating between Kevin Eastman Studios and our production team here on The Ghost of Hollywood. As mentioned previously, for more information about Kevin Eastman and his tour dates and all kinds of other cool stuff, check out kevineastmanstudios.com.
You can also check out our website at theghostofhollywood.com for all the latest interviews and stream The Ghost of Hollywood wherever you get your podcasts, so please listen, like, and subscribe, if possible.
We'd also like to thank KBOO Community Radio, specifically Asia and Tammy, for their hard work getting us on the air for a teaser during the daylight hours. It's worth noting The Ghost of Hollywood airs regularly on KBOO Community Radio every other Friday between 3 to 5:30 a.m.
Yeah, sometimes we get a little raunchy at the late night hours, so that's where we typically live if you happen to find us on the air in real time. Not that this happens too often yet, but you can write to Reagan and I or send general questions or suggestions to our production team by reaching us through the contact page on our website or writing to our attention by letter directly to KBOO Community Radio.
So stick around because we have plenty more in store as season 2 continues.
All right, are we done pitching yet? I mean, the credits are starting to go a little deep here.
Maybe they're having a stall for time?
Well, this was a 1-hour time slot, but we definitely aren't going to meet that goal. Anyway, you think he really could beat the water levels?
I don't know what these water levels are that you're talking about.
So, on the NES game back in yesteryear when I was born, there was this water level called the dam where you had to swim through tight spaces that basically electrocuted your character if you got too close.
What made it so hard?
Well, you know, unhook these bombs, right? And or like disarm them, whatever. And it was practically impossible not to get too close to anything.
I think he was being honest with you.
Well, you know, Reagan, what if they made a game for the Ghost of Hollywood?
What would be the goal?
I don't know. I mean, I figured this could all just be a natural part of the outcome of the inevitable Poxymania.
Oh, what are you on today? Babe Ruth show up in your dream and make you feel important?
Did you just hit me with a Sandlot reference?
Hey, it's daylight. I had to leave my weapons at home.
Oh, so now it's daylight. But during the interview, we were 2 weeks ago at night.
I guess the script likes to time travel.
Well, I suppose it doesn't really matter what time it is for us now, since we can do this as many times as it can be downloaded.
Like Burns and Allen on the TV screen, Poxy.
Good night, Reagan.
Good morning, Poxy.
Good night, wall crawlers. Good morning, radio listeners.
I am so confused right now.
You know what that means.
That this has been another episode of The Ghosts of Hollywood. I'm Miss Reagan here with Poxy Leonard, and until next time...
Good morning, and good night.
You have been listening to another episode of The Ghost of Hollywood. The Ghost of Hollywood is directed by Zach Flannery. The show is authored by Chris Klon and Zach Flannery. Composition samples and score by Jesse Garcia in Pineapple Nightmare. Production management by Mary Flannery at the Electric Garden Company. And mastering by Grady Sizemore in Microphonic Meltdown in Portland, Oregon. For more information on The Ghost of Hollywood, please visit theghostofhollywood.com. And you were listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. We are listener-supported radio. You can help us out by donating to KBOO Community Radio. Please visit kboo.fm/give to donate an amount of your choice, and we would be very appreciative. Now, we have a few minutes before the top of the hour and our next scheduled programming begins, so we're going to swing a couple in, some instrumentals really quick to get the day going. Nothing too intense. This is a classic from the Alan Parsons Project. This is Pipeline, and again, you were listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And that was the main title from the Escape from New York soundtrack by John Carpenter. Before that, you heard 3 a.m. from the After Hours soundtrack, and I opened up a little set there with Alan Parsons' classic Pipeline. Now, we are going to return to our regular programming here on KBOO Community Radio. Remember that we are listener-supported and that you can donate to KBOO Community Radio by visiting us at kboo.fm/give. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon at 90.7 FM. Stay tuned. More scheduled programming up next.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Show your support for KBOO programming by picking up the special limited edition KBOO Music That Moves You silicone collapsible water bottle. It's the perfect accessory to keep you hydrated while KBOO keeps you moving. Get yours now at kboo.fm/movesbottle.
Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Burns.